From KCUR Studios, I'm Sam Zeff, and this is Statehouse Blend, Kansas. We're past 90 days in the Kansas legislature with truly no end in sight, and I want to take a peek behind closed doors and talk about the work that gets done, and it's crucial that the public may not see. And we're going to do that with one of our favorite State House Blend guests, who will introduce herself now.
I'm Melissa Rooker. I represent the 25th District in Northeast Johnson County, and I live in Fairway.
Truly my favorite guest here on State House Blend. My other favorite guest, of course, my State House Blend colleague, Jim McLean from the Kansas News Service. Jim, nice to have you here.
Hey, Sam.
All right, we got a lot to talk about, but first, I insist on an update on young Malcolm, your grandson.
Malcolm just turned one.
Wow.
And I've been here in Topeka instead of celebrating in Phoenix. So hopefully we'll get out of session at some point and I can make some summer plans.
And if I remember right, I think the last time you were here, your son was taking the MCATs to get into med school?
So my son was rear-ended on I-35 and delayed the MCAT until July because he had a pretty significant concussion.
Oh, and no. You had to bring that up, Sam.
Well, I didn't know. Is he okay? How's he doing?
He's doing great, but he needed a couple weeks of downtime and rest, and MCAT didn't fit those plans.
Well, I'm pleased that he's on the mend.
Yes.
All right, let's get going. I'm going to give the first question to Jim.
There are no obvious signs of real progress. And sat in on some of the conference committee negotiations negotiating the tax issue, and we have this classic chicken and egg situation with some people saying, hey, I'm not going to vote for a tax increase until I know what we're shooting for, i.e. a school finance plan. And others saying, no, let's take this a bite at a time. Let's raise taxes, fix the budget, then deal with schools. And seemingly nobody can get off the dime. So from the inside perspective, where are we really?
Well, it's frustrating for all of us. The House has a school finance formula that is credible. I think we've...
The Rooker formula?
It's not the Rooker formula.
That's what people call it.
Everybody calls it that.
It's the chairman's bill draft.
It's the Rooker formula.
Well, we worked very hard in committee, and we took input from stakeholders, from specialists. We studied different components of the formula. We had hearings on every formula submitted, and ultimately the chairman brought out a bill draft, and the committee got to work and passed a variety of amendments.
But that formula originally called, and this is Sam's territory, but that formula originally called for north of $700 million over 5 years, and now it's down to what, $279 million?
Let's unpack that. It was originally, the chairman's bill draft was $75 million for 1 year, and then the index of Midwest CPI after that. So it was amended at the end of regular session, a 5-year, $150 million each year escalation, total of $750 million over the 5 years. But you have to have a tax package to support that size appropriation. So the committee backed down from that, and it was a pretty intense debate on Monday when this all got amended.
So you back down now to a two-year
two-year plan. And then CPI indexed from there on so that, you know, there are adjustments. The first year we put in $179 million. Mm-hmm. So it's our starting point that was in that $150 million times five package. The base aid is $4,006 per pupil. With the adjustments, it counted for $179 million that first year.
Okay, again, I said this is Sam's territory, but I want to have one last question here to kind of tie this together. So right now, that seems to be, at least the Senate doesn't have a bill yet, so you're looking at $279 million over 2 years.
Well, let me finish. You continue that 179 and add 100, so it over the 2 years, it's $458 million
cumulative
right. into schools.
So what kind of a tax increase bill do you need to fund that?
We need, Senate Bill 30 from last week would do it.
Okay. Most people aren't going to know what Senate Bill 30 is, including
me. Well, it's the package. The Senate voted a week ago.
Oh, yeah, the Democrats failed to vote for.
Yeah.
And so last question, because I know Sam wants to get in here, but we talked with Representative Jennings on a previous State House Blend podcast about how much damage had been done between this the moderates and the Democrats that have majority votes in both chambers, should they choose to exercise, not veto-proof majorities, but slight majorities. So how much damage was done to that coalition by that vote, and how does that complicate things going forward?
The mistake a lot of people make is considering the Republican side of the equation to only be two camps, to be either you're a mod or you're an ultra-conservative. Mm-hmm. And the reality is there are a lot of people that inhabit the space between those two ends of the Republican spectrum, and they're the people we need. You know, this idea that the mods are this or the you know, what – I don't like that, because there are a lot of people who don't self-identify as moderate Republicans, but who are practical and pragmatic enough to understand we have to adjust our taxes. And they're not being recognized when, you know, the Democrats will accuse the mods of caving. Well, no, that's actually not the case. A classic example on Monday in our education committee hearing had been a coalition of nine of us, five Democrats and four Republicans who often voted the same way. And the Democrats just assumed all four of the Republicans in that group were mods. And two actually, like I said, don't self-identify that way. So as their votes shifted back and forth, the Democrats became angrier and angrier. And I guess what disappointed me Monday is had we had help from the Democrats, we could have brought a larger finance package out with that bill. We had a vote to bring, first 2 years, bringing $513 million, and none of the Democrats voted for it because they didn't want to compromise on anything less than the five-year $150 million a year. Mm-hmm. Their amendment was 5 years. They shaved $32 million off over 4 years, so $8 million a year. Well, that wasn't much of a change. I voted for it, but you know, it was clearly not what the majority on the committee wanted to bring out. So at a point, you got to compromise. And I am protective of the formula itself, and I'm really, really convinced that it's time to move forward. We've got to get this into the hands of the court so they can review it, so that both sides can make their case. And if push comes to shove and we have something handed back to us, I'd sure rather have it be the money that we have to come back and fix and not the formula itself.
I want to talk about how you have emerged not as just a leader, but maybe the leader on the moderate side in this education debate. But I want to go back to what something you said about what happened in the Monday committee meeting. And I was there and I watched all these votes go down and go down and go down. And I'm wondering if you think that the Democrats were standing on principle, or do you think that they were playing politics, hoping that this is something they can use next year?
I actually don't know what their motives were. Politics certainly plays into everything we do. And I think in the larger picture, outside that committee room, but just under the dome, I think politics is driving the decision making right now. It sure looks like that to me. That the Democrats are refusing to collaborate meaningfully, and it is a political calculation, for sure. But in that committee room, we worked so well together all session long. I do think that they, you know, those folks, I know them well, and I think that is their principled stand, that it anything less won't work. And I don't disagree that amount of money will solve it, but the work on the formula has been my focus, and I'm trusting that the process will continue to work and the plaintiffs will make their case. I think they'll make a compelling case. The state will put on its defense. The burden of proof rests with the state at this phase of things. Yes. And I trust the court to decide if we got it right or not. But I am willing to move forward with a smaller finance package because I do believe in the strength of the formula and the need to get that piece of this approved.
Let's talk about what's going to happen on the floor. There was a big caucus meeting yesterday or day before where there were all the members were there, all the Republican members answered all of their questions. I also know that you and the chairman of the committee, Larry Campbell from Olathe, have been working closely together, especially in the last couple of weeks. I want you to predict for me how this is going to play out on the House floor. Do we expect dozens of amendments? Do you expect that perhaps more money will be put in to the formula when we get to the floor? Where are you on this?
Great question. One of the reasons the bill didn't immediately move is actually because I requested time to help educate our caucus members, because I'm a big believer that if we help people understand what's in the formula, it will cut down on the debate, the contention, all of the drama on the floor if people understand it going in. And so that caucus meeting occurred Wednesday, and it was terrific. The reviser walked through the formula in a very official, very nonpartisan way, and research staff walked through the spreadsheet so people would understand what every column represented, and then the legal counsel, Jeff King, gave a bit of a presentation about what his take on the constitutionality of the structure of it. And then Larry moderated Q&A for our caucus members, and I think we were there an hour and a half, which is a long time. And I think everyone aired the questions they had. And then after that, at the end of that meeting, what Chairman Campbell offered was we had a conference room reserved, and for the rest of the afternoon, Larry Campbell, myself, and Clay Arend sat, and
another member
of the committee, and Brenda Landwehr sat in. And so four of us from the committee made ourselves available to take one-on-one questions about the specific
districts. Did people come in and consult
yes,
with you? I
mean, absolutely. You had people? Mm-hmm. And we had really good discussions, so a lot of fears were calmed, and we were taking input to see if there were trends in terms of what people zeroed in on.
Back to Sam's question, all that work and all that education, what does that mean when you get to the floor?
I think some of the components of the formula won't get questioned on the floor because those questions have been asked and answered already. So I hope it simplifies debate a bit. Now, it will still be spirited and probably lengthy, I would imagine. And I know there will be an attempt on the floor to increase the funding, and I don't know how that will play out.
Where are you on that?
I would absolutely support more funding, and I would absolutely support a tax package to support that funding level and the other things that we need to do for state government. But I'm realistic, and watching this process play out and the difficulty we've had with the milestone of 84 and 27, I know the governor still
just
has
to explain
the veto.
The number of votes you need in both the House and the Senate to overcome a veto.
Majority required, and I grow up more and more alarmed every day with the timeline involved.
Well, think about how things might have been different. You passed that tax bill, which wasn't a full repeal of the 2012 tax cuts, but it came fairly close. You passed that fairly early in the session.
We did.
And the governor vetoed it, and the House overrode the veto. The Senate came up 3 votes short.
Right.
And those dynamics over the intervening months really haven't changed. You're still really in that place, aren't
Correct.
You?
Correct.
And, of course, the latest offer in the conference committee, the tax committee, was full repeal of the 2012 tax cuts, would have raised $1.4 billion a year,
right?
Enough to close the $900 million budget gap over the next 2 years, probably enough to fund the Rooker plan for schools. And yet the House backed off that offer at the last minute, so there will be no vote on the floor. Why'd that happen?
I wasn't there, but from following social media, it appeared that there was hesitancy coming from the Senate side. And, surprisingly, it was the Democratic conferee who backed away from actually running that bill, standing on the idea that we should do schools first, which at some point something has to go.
In a perfect world, you might agree
with
him, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
But I'm not in control. You know, somebody asked me yesterday at lunch, well, why aren't we doing schools first? I said, you know, it appears the speaker prefers to do tax first. Well, why does he get to make that decision? I was asked. I said, because he's the speaker.
But why is that? Why is he so insistent on doing taxes first? Because Holland's speculation on that is that he wants to do taxes first literally to set the parameters around his school finance plan so that it doesn't get too big.
Well, I'm going to defer and suggest I know the speaker is a friend of State House Blend, and that might be a great question for him. I'm not going to put any kind of I don't know, but that is the preference, and that's it. That's the world we inhabit, where he does get to decide to do that. I would say in this case, the full repeal, that package is large enough to sufficiently cover the full finance package that the State Board of Ed recommended, that the plaintiffs are asking for, that the Democrats say they stand for, and fund the rest of the budget as it stands. So it really wouldn't matter if taxes are first, if that were the package on the table.
And if that vote had taken place on the House floor, we can talk about the Senate later, but would a full repeal bill pass in the House, do you think?
That's questionable. It might get 63, but I don't believe it rises to a veto-proof level.
Yeah, well, probably not.
So with that, and that's the problem. So with the hesitancy from the Senate, it appeared that the offer was made. No one, you know, the Senate wanted the House to go first. The House said, no, Senate, you go first. Then the House came back. It looked like they said, why don't we both run it at the same time? And that offer was declined. And that's when, you know, it was clear there really wasn't serious interest.
Yeah, which means we may all be working on the weekends, but I don't mean to whine about that. I want to ask about, you've been in the room with Speaker Reichman and Chairman Campbell as you plan how to roll this out. First, we had the big caucus meeting. There'll be plans, be planning on how to manage the bill on the floor. You've clearly emerged as the leader of that moderate writ large, right, however that umbrella group is. Do you feel some additional pressure to bring this bill or to compromise, find compromise between all these various groups? Because now, I mean, you really have to lead on this.
Well, it's – thank you. I don't know that that's how I see myself, but what I will say, Sam, is there's no controlling faction. So there's no group of people who have the voting block large enough to run the show. So,
but they clearly believe that you're one of the people who can help create that coalition, no?
Well, I am working to. And it's necessary to be statesmen and to find the compromise that we can agree on. I mean, that's our job. Nobody is going to get exactly what they want. And as people realize that, it becomes easier to begin to find points of agreement. So, yeah, I am trying to work through this to bring forward the best structure in terms of the formula. I can't stress enough, that is, for me, the most important thing. We can argue all day long about dollars going into the formula, but I have to remind people, we will not have the authority to send even $1 out to our school districts come July 1st without a proper formula. So that is the most important issue we're dealing with. The money, we can agree, we can disagree, we can settle. Whatever we send to the court will be evaluated. And I trust in the process. The state will argue the case for why we sent what we sent. The plaintiffs will argue the case for what they want. And we've got a Supreme Court that's in charge of deciding who got it right.
I want to go back to something you said a few minutes ago about being alarmed about where we are in the process. Mm-hmm. You seem to suggest that we're a little stalled. We're not moving as fast as perhaps you would like. What is alarming you about this?
Well, I spoke to this Monday in committee. At that time, it was 7 weeks from June 30th, and so the clock is ticking.
And now it's not.
Now it's not. It's closer to six. Yeah. There are things that begin to happen in June ahead of that June 30th deadline that have to, you know, certain steps have to be taken. There is the final pay period for state employees overall, not just school employees, by I don't know the date certain, but it's
about halfway through June.
Halfway
June,
through
yeah.
June,
12th maybe.
The last pay period begins. It's the first payroll of the next fiscal
year.
Yeah,
people need to understand that the state fiscal year runs from July 1st to June 30th of the following year. It's not on the calendar year.
Right. So that begins the talk of furloughs and layoffs of state employees. Well, that includes schools. People forget what goes on in our schools over the summer months. So there's summer school, all sorts of activities and programs. But what I spoke about in committee was the food program. We served 1.3 million meals last summer to children for whom that may well have been the only meal they had all day. And the estimate is 1.4 million this summer. That program is in jeopardy because although the food itself comes, you know, the money for it comes through the federal lunch program, the buildings have to be open, the personnel on the ground have to be there to serve. And without a resolution to this, that can't happen. Buildings can't just be locked for the summer. The systems in them, the HVAC, the computer systems, that, right. that all has to be powered down systematically. So we learned this last summer as the deadline was approaching. That will start about roughly a week ahead of time. So we really don't have the luxury of all the way till June
30th. Which kind of begs the question, though, because and I know State House Blend listeners really like to get into the weeds of these things. Otherwise, they wouldn't be listening probably at this point for sure. But you the process issue, and you talked about wanting to get the formula right, and then we can deal with the money, and the court can intervene and say, yes, that's enough, or no, it's not. But the timing also would suggest that it would be better to get it right in the first place.
Sure.
Rather than have a jump through a bunch of hoops of evaluating whether it's enough, whether it's not enough, how much longer would that then delay resolution to this? So, I mean, you could understand the argument that we've got one shot here.
Absolutely.
We've got a Supreme Court order on the table. Why not get it right and know that we've got it right from the get-go?
Well, that's why my vote has always been on the larger side of the education funding plan. I mean, that is how I personally cast my vote, but I don't have, you know, clearly I wasn't in the majority. So
we've anointed you the leader here today.
Well,
just
thank
go out and
you.
Get it done.
In all seriousness, that is how I've been voting. But it takes a majority, and that's not the opinion of the majority. So okay, we'll go down this path. This is repeatedly how these cases have been handled. Last year, I helped move the first bill because I wanted the court to have it. And I said in my remarks on the House floor, I don't believe this will satisfy the court, but let's get on with it. And we did get it back and had to redo it. And it was a special session. And I did help move things along in special session, and we got the job done right.
I'm starting to get disturbing thoughts about seeing myself here and you guys still here in July.
I know. My birthday's June 29th. I love you guys, but I hope I'm home celebrating with my family.
Mine's December 30th, and I have some fear that we may still be back.
I'll split the difference
for
July 24.
Yeah. I want to get one more comment from you. You did two things I think that are important as we get closer and what's going to happen with the court. And one you talked about, one, the burden of proof is on the state to prove that this is an adequate and equitable funding solution. But I think the other thing that is important that we haven't talked too much about, although we talked about it in committee, when I say we, of course, I mean you, the court has been clear that they don't care how much money you can raise,
right.
that the funding amount has got to be adequate and equitable, and it makes no difference about how much you think you can raise. I think they're essentially saying you're the government. go out and raise what you right. what you need to raise. Is that something that you think some members are not?
Well, that's the hard argument.
Are avoiding, right? Mm-hmm. Is that that notion that they're trying to, as they are with the
that's
tax
the Democrats
plan, right?
Argument, yeah.
The argument that, well, we just don't have that much money to spend, and the court doesn't really look at it that way. That's a big rub, isn't it?
Well, it is. And until last night, I had the quote. It was in my purse, and I'm sorry I took it out because it was, you know, it was from one of the lower court rulings, but it was my favorite passage of all time in terms of legal writing. They spoke to that this is a self-inflicted wound, I believe was the phrase, and they really didn't care that raising taxes is hard. Raising taxes is hard. But it doesn't excuse us from the responsibility to take care of
things.
Well,
and that's the other thing that gets lost in this discussion sometimes is you've got this really monumental school funding case going on. It's been going on for years, and now you have an order on the table, and you have the opportunity to maybe put that to bed for a long time,
right.
Okay? And you're talking about a lot of money to do that. At the very same time, mm-hmm. you've got a budget deficit over the coming fiscal year and the year after that creeping up on $1 billion,
right.
which just – those are monumental challenges.
They are. They're historic in terms of the scope of the challenge.
And arguably, many would argue, they are both self-inflicted wounds.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What are you going to do about it?
I've put my best foot forward, and I'm going to continue to try and find enough colleagues to come along and join us in solving it.
We're going to leave it there. State Representative Melissa Rooker from Fairway, you are my favorite guest on State House
Thank
Blend.
Thank you, Sam.
And it's always a pleasure to have you here. Jim McLean, always, I always learn a little bit.
You're hesitating, Sam.
When you're here.
I enjoyed it too, Sam.
State House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp, and today came from the KCUR studios in Topeka, which just happened to be directly across the street from the state capitol. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you do your podcast business. If you're on that NPR One app, search for us in Explore and make sure to click subscribe. Find us also on KCUR.org/statehouseblend. You can follow me on the Twitter. I'm at Sam Zeff. My co-host Brian Allison, who keeps track of the craziness over there in State House Blend, Missouri, is at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff, and I'll see you around the radio.